Podshow is pleased to bring you the following killer content direct from the all-new feature-rich podshow.com. Get it, play it, dig it.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago and Camelot. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 98. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Peter Maverick. Are you almost there?
Peter, how are you?
I'm good. We're almost there.
I have missed you. I've been under a rock and
busy
with my show. But I am so glad to be here and I'm back
in the swing of things.
We have got some great shows heading up to our big 100th show up next week.
100 and beyond. I'm so excited.
100 and beyond. We have arrived.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, finally we're not really toddlers anymore. We're kind of doing it. We're walking.
We are toddlers.
Yeah.
We're not newborns anymore.
Right. We're not crawling. So,
you know what? I guess the big news, it was obviously the big CNN news, breaking news, was that Rosie O'Donnell is leaving The View as of June per the end of her 1-year contract. And she said that, you know, I walked into a business meeting today at Windy City and it was like the first thing on people's lips. And I went home and was
room
so glad.
Room full of lesbians. Let's be real.
Well, and the end news people, I mean, just gay news people. And, you know, because it's been amazing to have such an openly gay, politically gay. Ellen is gay, but she is not politically gay.
She's not.
An openly politically gay person in morning television. Yep. And
I agree with her politics, but.
Well, you don't have to agree with her politics, but she is there and she unabashedly has been stirring it up, which I think has been great for a year. And my lovely TiVo with a brain has been knowing to record The View for me. I don't even have to have it programmed in. So I went home and watched it today and watched the episode and her talking about it. And you can obviously tell that Barbara Walters is sad, really was hoping that she would stay for more than a year. Mm. And it was all about negotiations. They could not get Rosie only wanted to sign up for one more year and they wanted her to sign up for 3. And I don't know what the money situation was either, but Barbara and Rosie were really not in the room. It was more the people who ABC daytime television and Rosie's, you know, agent and manager. I'm sure Rosie was in the room for that. But anyhow, she has definitely made television really exciting and interesting for women, mostly women, I think, who stay home during the day and watch The View. I think have gotten to really see her and her life and her being a mother and her being a wife
and her being a
woman going through menopause and her being a whole lot of things, you know,
her being a successful lesbian with a successful career with much success, which is,
and she hasn't been relentless against this administration and George Bush. And I'm happy for that. I mean, you know, sometimes she doesn't always have the smartest comebacks, but I like her a lot. I like her for being there and being willing to be there and have all the shit thrown at her that's been thrown at her this year.
I think the cool thing to watch will be what she does next.
Because
morning television, especially a morning television program like that, which is how many years now they've been going?
10.
Has such a such an embedded part in people's lives, and to have her in there is just amazing. I only hope that she doesn't disappear underground again like she did before.
We know their ratings will obviously drop, I think, because they had such a spike in ratings this year. They had a real renaissance. They had a real rebirth this year, and it'll be interesting to see if they can, because I think they did not expect this to not come to a resolution. And Barbara Walters even said that today. We have no clue who her replacement is going to be, because we actually thought this was going to resolve itself. So, you know, I think that, and even Elizabeth Hasselbeck, you know, who obviously I can't stand, but she thanked Rosie today, because she said, I think having you here pushing buttons has had a lot of really intense dynamic conversation happen, whether whatever people think about it. And so it has definitely made it worth watching, because you don't know what the hell is going to come out of their mouths. So it's very exciting.
But if you follow the blogosphere like I do, it just all ends up in the wash anyway, so you can hear it everywhere.
Well, it does. Well, she has a fabulous, I mean, she has not a fabulous, but she has an intense blog. I mean, she blogs all the time and journals or whatever she does.
She thinks she's E.E. Cummings.
I don't know.
It's in this weird poetry style.
I know.
But I think actually the ratings might go up. It depends. It depends who they're going to bring on. You know, we know it would be interesting if they brought on a man. And I know The View hasn't traditionally been about.
They will never bring on a man. Maybe a gay man. I don't know. Who would they bring on?
I don't know.
What man
I
could sit
know.
In that estrogen?
I do not know. I don't think it'll happen. Know.
They still haven't found anybody for Star. You know, they just have this rotating chair. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
They
but
have two rotating chairs.
They have two rotating chairs now. But, you know, and Barbara's only there some of the time. So it can't be Joy Behar and Elizabeth Hasselbeck. That's no show. They've got to have an anchor. So they're going to be scrambling.
They've got to have something. So, you know, I think what's going to happen is somebody in like local in a local news market, they're gonna find some gem. They're gonna find
somebody.
You
know what they've been looking for over a year? They've had everyone from African American women to fill the Star Jones position, and just other
what's
women.
Kathy Lee doing these days?
I don't know. Being a nut job.
Maybe she'll get up
name
there.
That tune. Right. Well, you know, it'll be very
make
interesting.
Me some shoes.
It'll be very interesting to see. So but I have to say, I think Rosie is gonna let it all hang out between now and June. So I think it's going to be really something to set your television set to. And speaking of which, you know, my dear, dear friend, Alexandra Billings, now she was on our show a long time ago and said, you know, the most exciting television this year has been The View, and she loves watching Rosie. Well, I have to tip my hat, because I'm watching my logo and I'm watching the GLAAD Awards, the 18th annual GLAAD Media Awards with my girlfriend. And the episode, they had the best episode of a drama and Where the Boys Are, which was the episode that Alexandra was the transgendered patient in that episode, also to the men of Grace Hospital, Seattle, Grace Seattle, go on a camping trip. And so it's revealed that one guy is gay, who's the bartender across the street, and his partner, who is also, they're a mixed race couple. And so it's very interesting. But anyhow, so definitely had a lot of gay GLBT issues in the episode. But it won the best episode. And Alexandra Billings was on stage with the entire cast, or many of the cast. And also T.R. Knight was given a standing ovation as he came out at the beginning, which is really amazing. And, you know, it was an interesting night. There's been much controversy around the GLAAD Awards. You know, here TV would not air them because they only honor gay representation in mainstream media, right? Because that's how it started years ago. There wasn't any, it was trying to honor our straight and mainstream allies for accurately portraying us.
Sure, and show the diamonds in the rough, but times have really changed.
Times have really changed. And so, you know, it's definitely, I think, will be something that GLAAD will look at. The most crazy thing, and maybe you all saw this as well, you know, they have now divided up the awards. It used to be D.C., New York, and L.A. And now it's San Francisco, L.A., Florida, for some freaking reason. I guess maybe the Latin community, because they do so many Latin awards.
No, not the Latin community. There's a huge gay community down there.
No, I know. But the Latin gay community. I mean, I think there's a lot of Latin Spanish speaking awards. That's the only reason I can imagine that they go to South Florida. I can't understand why they would have an awards in South Florida for media, unless they were going to deal with the Hispanic community. But anyhow, I don't know.
I mean,
on this list, there are like 20 Hispanic awards and then others. So I think that's got to be what it is. But anyhow, and then they have New York still. They don't have DC anymore. But
no Chicago.
And no Chicago. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's really what was so bizarre to me is that, you know, they give these awards that have certain titles, and they gave an award to Martina Navratilova for her work, which was really awesome and very, very cool. They gave one to Tom Ford, which, okay, fine, you know, with Gucci,
but
whatever. I know.
I'm so confused that mainstream, but they're mainstream gay people. Like, what?
I know. But then they give an award to Jennifer Aniston, the Vanguard Award. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit here and watch them read her bio on why they're giving it to her. This is their, her bio. And I like Jennifer Aniston, all fine and good.
I'll tell you why.
My girlfriend thinks she's hot, but anyhow. And Jake Gyllenhaal gave her this award, you know, introduced her, which, why don't you give it to Jake Gyllenhaal? I don't understand why you give it to her. But anyhow.
He took one for the team.
I guess he did. I don't know. But anyhow. So, you know, they're reading her bio, and it's all about Jennifer Aniston, you know, was on the cast of Friends, one of the first sitcoms to show, you know, a lesbian wedding and a lesbian relationship. I was like, well, she didn't have shit to do with that, A. Right. And then The Object of My Affection with Paul Rudd, where she portrayed a young woman who wanted to have a child with a gay man. And then they had one other like random reference that couldn't have been more 6 degrees of her even literally being in the same
Jennifer Aniston's same room with the GLBT peers.
Yeah. And then they said, and then they mentioned the thing about her kiss on Nip Tuck. And of course, Jake Gyllenhaal, thank God he didn't probably read the copy, because he just said, and she shared a smooch, and he kind of said it tongue in cheek,
right,
with Courtney Cox on the show you like that I think is dreadful. What's it called?
Dirt.
And so anyhow, I just was kind of horrified. I was like, of all people, I mean, they gave it to Charlize Theron last year because she did Monster.
Well, yeah.
And she played a pretty intense character. And she and her partner, her boyfriend, Stuart something, Townsend.
His last name, yeah.
He said that they said they would not get married until GLBT people could get married. That was a statement they made long before she knew she was going to get this award. So I understand her. Mm-hmm. I do not understand Jennifer Aniston. And are we just giving it to a pretty hot woman in LA that people, gay men, want to be like?
Let me tell you something. I think gay men empathize with Jennifer Aniston because, number one, she's pathetic. She never wears color. She only wears gray.
And
she mopes around. And I know why she gets dumped by all these men. Truly. Because she's just a pathetic person. And I think there's a bunch of queers out there empathizing with her, and boys and girls. You just got to let that go. You just got to let that go. Mm. She's not deserving. Whoever voted for her,
They don't vote for her. Like, some committee decides this.
Well, you know, i.e. a handful of people voted for her.
I guess. I mean, you know, there were some really great ones that they have a limited release film and a wide release film. Mm-hmm. The wide release was Little Miss Sunshine. And the limited release was Quinceañera. Great film.
Yes.
And there were some other
way better than Little Miss Sunshine should have been nominated, but there we go.
No, they were in separate. They were in separate.
No,
categories.
I mean, we're talking in the Oscars.
Oh, okay.
If you haven't seen Quinceañera, folks, really go on.
Yeah, it's great movie. And they had some other great movies. You know, Imagine Me and You was nominated with Piper Perabo, who was in Short Bus, the John Cameron Mitchell. So that's really good. You know, the Outstanding Drama Series went to Brothers and Sisters, which has definitely dealt with the gay characters in a real. You know what they talk about it being authentic and. The representations being, I can't remember what the three adjectives are, but it's about it being, you know, authentic and done in a tasteful way, an accurate, tasteful representation. But it beat out The L Word, you know, which was nominated.
But The L Word is
Showtime. It's on Showtime. So it's not on Ugly Betty, of course, as I keep saying here, the gayest show that's ever been on television, won the Outstanding Comedy Series, and truly is just the gayest show ever. But just showing a reality show is Project Runway, daily drama, All My Children.
It's on Bravo. Bravo is the gayest network. Bravo should be Logo.
But the one that was so bizarre, and even speaking of Rosie was one for her All Aboard Rosie's Family Cruise, a documentary that was done for HBO, and beat out Billie Jean King, Portrait of a Pioneer on HBO. And even Rosie said, you know, I saw that documentary. It was fantastic. And she is the whole reason that we had a women's movement. And therefore, I think that's the whole reason we had a gay movement, was because we had a women's movement. And so, you know, I thought there was a lot of class in Rosie for handing that over. But yeah, it's just, you know, it was a room full of, you know, it was an interesting year because you have John Amici there who's come out. You have, you know, T.R. Knight who's come out. You have Sarah Paulson on Studio 60 who's now out. You have a lot of more people who are walking the mainstream planks who are gay. But I don't know. Something about it still rang
it seems a
politically
little...
politically untrue.
Yeah, it seems just a little misguided, but not in a bad way, because yay for the gay. We like the gay. Yeah. We're happy for
and
that.
I'm thrilled for Alexandra, and I'm thrilled for that episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Was Isaiah Washington there?
No, he was not. Just... And T.R. Knight made a think, you know, made a joke, not a joke about it. He was actually very serious and very, you know, he said he was really angry. He's like, I'm really angry at still how far we have to go. And, you know, it was.
Did he call him out? Did he say his name?
No, he did not call him out. But I mean, he kind of called out people to come out and create change and and to stop hate speech, which you know exactly what he was talking about. Yeah. Well, in the wake of IMUS, in the wake of Virginia Tech, in the wake of a lot of things that have just kind of unfurled. So anyhow, I think that, you know, if you get a chance to watch them, they air them, I'm sure, all the time on Logo, or you can go online at glad.org, GLAAD.org, and at least see clips. But to our good friend Alexandra,
yes,
amazing
congrats, baby.
That she is, you know, made a name in history and was definitely the featured actress and was listed as a featured actress in the episode.
So tell me who we got on the show today, because you conducted this lovely interview.
I did. You know, I had a really great time this week sitting down with two of the stars, one of whom is also the playwright of Pulp, which is a musical comedy that About Face Theater is doing here in Chicago. And, you know, even though we talk about plays not that often that are only local to Chicago, but this is a play and a script that, you know, if you don't live here and you're involved in theater and you like queer theater, you can get the rights to it. It's been done in New Haven. It's been done in LA. It's been done in Boston. It's been done in Atlanta. And it started here in Chicago. And it's coming back for 3 weeks only. Pulp. It's based on lesbian pulp fiction novels. And it's just gotten such unanimously stellar reviews. And it's here for 3 weeks only, May 2nd through the 20th. So you want to rush and get your tickets now. I sit down with Patricia Kane, who wrote this based on her love of old 1950s kind of Barbara Stanwyck movies and her love of pulp fiction novels and pulp covers. And also Amy Warren, who, you know, Peter and I just saw in Rabbit Hole. She played the sister that we loved in that.
Who had a wonderful little write-up in the Trib
about
the food.
She did about the food that she ate.
It was hysterical.
Yeah, it was great.
It was hysterical.
And Amy plays kind of the, is she or isn't she owner of a cabaret,
who, a gay cabaret.
Yes, a gay cabaret for the lesbians. And also co-wrote the music for the play as a fantastic musician and singer herself. So we just kind of sat down and talked about lesbian pulp fiction, where it started, this play, the ideas of it, and how this play is speaking to gay, straight, young and old, male and female. And so it's really an exciting and fun interview. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be back because we got lots of news today as well. Just so much going on in the world. And we're happy that we're heading into our 100th show, continually telling you about it here on Windy City Queercast.
Camelot, as never seen before. For one brief shining moment, light transcended darkness. It was a time before legend. Honor and a man's word were all. Glory was forged in steel. One man's vision would unite a nation. Another man's love would divide it. Romance and passion, love and treachery. Once there was a spot where men dared to dream. Camelot returns to the stage like you have never seen it before.
Michael York in Camelot, a timeless masterpiece where honor and chivalry reign. Playing at the LaSalle Bank Theater May 1st through 13th. For tickets, call 312-902-1400.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny, too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light.
Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
It's time to dust off that tux and ball gown and throw on your dancing shoes, because the annual HRC Chicago Gala is right around the corner. Join us June 16th at the Hilton Chicago on South Michigan Avenue for HRC's Tickled Pink Gala, celebrating Chicago's GLBT community with dinner, dancing, a silent auction, and many more surprises. This year's keynote speaker is Academy Award-winning actress and newest star of The L Word, Marlee Matlin. For more, visit TickledPink2007.com, and tickets are on sale now at boxofficetickets.com. Just search for HRC Chicago to get your tickets today.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 22nd, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Travel to the interior of Liberia with the world premiere play Black Diamond. The Chicago Sun-Times calls it a remarkable, hugely ambitious theatrical debut. And it is a Tribune critic's pick, playing now through May 20th at Looking Glass Theater Company in the Water Tower Waterworks downtown. For tickets to Black Diamond, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
Now at Writers Theater, the Puppet Master of Lodz, after escaping from Auschwitz, a once revered puppet master has barricaded himself in the attic. In an attempt to bring back his lost family, he prepares for his greatest puppet show ever. Hopeful, moving, and eminently theatrical, this beautiful story is a must-see. For more about The Puppet Master of Lodz, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Pulp is back and better than ever. About Face Theater's deliciously campy homage to the sultry world of lesbian pulp fiction is coming home to Chicago May 2nd through the 20th, 3 weeks only. Join playwright Patricia Kane and the original cast for the return of the hit comedy The Tribune called funny, smart, and eminently entertaining, and the LA Times hailed as a comic bullseye. It's here 3 weeks only, so visit aboutfacetheater.com and get your tickets to see Pulp today.
Glitterati Productions presents the Chicago premiere of Ken Ludwig's hysterical backstage farce, Moon Over Buffalo. The funniest show, says columnist Liz Smith. Superbly acted and glamorously costumed, this fast-paced comedy leaves the audience breathless from laughter. Playing now at Theater Building Chicago, 1225 West Belmont. See Moon Over Buffalo. You'll laugh your moon off. For tickets, visit theaterbuildingchicago.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
The U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties has started hearings to possibly move a federal hate crimes bill known as the Matthew Shepard Act through Congress. Hundreds of clergy members from all 50 states rallied at the U.S. Capitol last week, urging Congress to pass the measure.
Disgraced former U.S. Congressman Mark Foley is paying legal bills with campaign funds. As authorities still investigate if Foley conducted any illegal communications with male pages who worked on Capitol Hill, Foley spent over $200,000 in campaign money on attorneys from November to January. That's a lot of money. He resigned last year after being confronted with the emails and checked himself into rehab shortly thereafter.
Amnesty International has condemned the anti-gay violence taking place in Jamaica, saying the latest incidences of homophobic violence only strengthen our viewpoint that the Jamaican government must take a proactive stance against homophobia. On April 2nd, a crowd allegedly threw stones and bottles at men dancing together along Montego Bay. On the 8th of April, a crowd reportedly threw items through a window during a funeral attended by people the mob thought were gay.
In Colorado, Governor Bill Ritter plans to sign a bill that will permit same-sex couples to adopt children. The state Senate and House both approved the measure. Colorado will be the 11th state that will allow gay adoptions.
Dallas Councilman Ed Oakley could make history as the first openly gay elected mayor of one of the nation's 10 largest cities when elections are held May 12th. Almost 20 people are running for the position. The Victory Fund backed Oakley, and he is considered one of the top candidates.
Seven Stories Press will publish I Had to Say Something, The Art of Ted Haggard's Fall, a memoir by Mike Jones written by Sam Gallegos. The male prostitute who outed anti-gay minister Ted Haggard as a former client in June to coincide with Pride Month. Jones will embark on a 12-city tour to promote the book.
Way to make lemons and lemonade. Wee. Speaking of Haggard, he has moved to Phoenix from Colorado Springs in order to embark upon a new beginning. Haggard resigned as leader of the Colorado's New Life Church and the National Association of Evangelicals last year after Mike Jones, the escort alleged he had a drug and sex-fueled relationship with Haggard. Haggard left Colorado Springs as part of a severance package with the church. He plans to get a graduate degree in counseling.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. At a local university.
In India, three attorneys have reportedly filed complaints against actor Richard Gere for kissing Bollywood actress Shilpa Shetty at a public function. The legal development occurred after crowds in several cities burned effigies of Gere for smooching at an AIDS awareness event. Public kisses are forbidden in the country.
Well, this is the big tragedy of the week. The TV Guide channel has bounced comedian Joan Rivers from the red carpet. The channel no longer wants Rivers covering big Hollywood events such as the Academy Awards. Execs have now asked Dancing with the Stars and soap opera star contestant Lisa Rinna to host. She will debut at the Emmy Awards in September.
If she runs into something, she'll bounce with her big giant lips.
Jennifer
Lopez and Mark Anthony have filed lawsuits against the National Enquirer overseas because of a recent item in the publication's British and Irish editions that connected the couples to a drug scandal. The article was about photographer Michael Starr, charged in the U.S. with heroin possession and child pornography. The article, which included a photo of Starr and Anthony, said that Anthony and Lopez were, quote, caught up in a heroin scandal. The couple is seeking apologies, detractions, and a six-figure settlement.
Very nice. And that's your Windy City Queercast news.
Hi, this is Patrick Bristow, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. What do you think of that?
I'm your boogie doctor, baby. Everybody stand in line, 'cause it's love injection time.
Rock is in the pocket. Rock is in the love socket. Rock is in the pocket.
I'm your boogie doctor, baby.
It has been called a comic bullseye, a sexy romp, the cult hit of the season by the Sun-Times. It sold out in Chicago, went on to productions in Atlanta, New Haven, Boston, Los Angeles, and now it's back in Chicago for 3 weeks only. I'm of course talking about the revival of About Face Theater's hit Pulp, a seductive, feisty, and uber-gay homage to the world of lesbian pulp fiction. And before there was the L World, ladies, there was Pulp. It was a world of fabulous, sexy lesbians and they're back. Joining me today is the playwright Patricia Kane, who also portrays Winnie in the cast, and Amy Warren, fresh off her run in Rabbit Hole at Goodman. You heard Peter and I talking about that show, who created the score for Pulp and plays the seductive and elusive Vivian Blaine. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Welcome to the Queercast.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
We love to have the ladies on the Queercast. So let's talk about how exciting it is to have Pulp back in Chicago. Patricia Kane, I'm so excited. And it's perfect for springtime when we're all feeling feisty and frisky and heading into summer.
Absolutely.
So what is the history of the lesbian pulp novel?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that.
And it doesn't have to be scientific. I just, you know, kind of what is the genre for the younger group who have no clue where it came from? And
it started pretty much in the late 30s, early 40s. And it was born out of the dime novels, and there were several that started leaning towards this kind of pulp idea, and I'm sure a lot of folks have heard about The Well of Loneliness, which was kind of one of the beginnings. Sometimes it's considered a pulp novel, but it's a little bit more literature.
Radcliffe Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. But what started happening was that the pulps started getting more bold in their subject matter, and so they started introducing these storylines, and some of the first big ones were like The Woman's Barracks and I'm going blank here right at the moment, but there were a lot of ones. And what happened was that I believe it was in the 40s these pulps were starting to become very popular, and they were also becoming more risque. And so that meant that the Congress had to get involved, and they started having a hearing over the pornography issue, basically, for it. And so when that happened, it cl- clamp down on these pulps. And that's when we were introduced to the lesbians not ending happy. Because as long as the lesbians had to pay for their sin, then it was okay that these could be published. Otherwise, they would have gotten shut down. So that's why during the heyday of the lesbian pulps, even though they might have these fabulous affairs during the course of them, the lesbians always had to end up either in an asylum or dead or lose their child or, you know.
Sounds like the lesbian movies of the 80s.
A little bit. So that's what happened with those. And
where did people get them? How do people know? I mean, because it sounds to me like kind of the energy that I felt when I was in my teens renting French films to see lesbianism.
You're blushing even now.
I blush all the time. I love it.
They were sold at like drugstores and bus stations and train stations. And they were written, quite frankly, for men.
Okay.
But what happened was that lesbians started to recognize themselves in these novels, and especially on the covers.
Yeah, talk about the artwork. Because, I mean, nowadays you can go in feminist or lesbian bookstores and you see the magnets or you see cards that are based on these images of the covers of these novels.
Right.
And they're fantastic.
They are fantastic. They're beautiful. They're sexy. They're fun. They're campy. In our eye, they're campy. I don't think in that day they were so much campy.
Yeah.
And when the novels would have a lesbian subline or the main line of it be about lesbians, the covers would have, you know, two women on the cover with a knowing glance over a shoulder, or two women and a man, but the man's in the background looking very distraught.
In various stages of lingerie.
Yeah, and in various stages of lingerie, the different, you know, which buttons are unbuttoned and things like that. So that was part of the clues. And that's how lesbians were able to glom onto this because, you know, we didn't have gay liberation. We didn't have any of that stuff. And so this was a way for lesbians to know that they were not alone.
So when you started writing pulp, I mean, you're a member of About Face Theater, which is a gay and lesbian theater company, and they encourage new work. And I'm sure there's a lot that you could do with the genre of pulp. But what did you want to do if you were going to put it on stage today in, you know, at this time in a contemporary setting? What did you want to change and what did you want to keep about the books?
I wanted to keep the beauty of the covers. So I wanted the production to look like the covers looked. Mm-hmm. But when you read these, they sound like the great film noir movies from the 30s, 40s, early 50s even, like Written on the Wind and stuff like that. And so I wanted to maintain that kind of sound. Now, what I wanted to change for a contemporary audience was, you know, number one, I wanted it to end happily for everybody. I wanted...
Thus a comedy.
Yes, thus a comedy. And I wanted it to have just a couple of other kind of... twists that you don't usually get when you think about stereotypical stuff. Like I wanted Terry, the protagonist in the show, to be the aggressor and also the younger. So it's the younger one, because usually in these novels it's the older lesbian
predatory
preying on the poor innocent young things. Mm-hmm. So little things like that, you know. And I just wanted all
little
to
do they know
fun.
As we age, we get shy. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So, Amy, this has like a really interesting world to play. And first, can you just tell us a little bit about the story? I mean, you play Vivian Blaine. How does she fit in? And just tell us kind of who some of the characters are that people will meet when they come see Pulp.
Well, first of all, they're entering the Well, which is our little sanctuary. It is a nightclub that they can see drag king performances and cabaret-type performances. But it's also Ms. Vivian's, it's her little world outside of her bigger world, which is she's a very successful businesswoman. She's rather wealthy. She travels to Paris all the time. She owns a cosmetics company. And we don't see Vivian for the first couple sections of the play. Vivian comes in a little bit later, and there's a palpable attraction between her and Terry Logan, who's played by Julian Nearing, from the moment they set eyes on each other. However, Miss Vivian is, and I'll let Pat describe, Miss Vivian is one of these, is she or isn't she?
Is she or isn't she gay?
Is she or isn't she? And she is pretty much, I think, and Pat, you could concur or disagree, I think she's kind of in denial about who she is throughout much of the play until, well, I don't want to spoil that.
Well, it is a comedy.
It is a comedy.
Yeah.
And so with this nightclub setting, Pat, you've written these musical numbers mm-hmm. and written these fantastic lyrics, and then you all had to give them a musical life. What were the influences you were looking at in terms of lyrics and music? Because it's a play with music, or mm-hmm. I mean, it's less a musical than a play with music. But, you know, what were you drawing from? What influences musically? Was it of a certain time period?
Absolutely.
Mid-50s.
Yeah.
So very much Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald.
A lot of that, you know, very 50s jazz feeling. However, each of the characters has sort of their own sound.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Pat plays Winnie, who is our resident expert sort of drag performer, and she's singing a song that is distinctly more masculine than the other songs. Then Miss Vivian is a cabaret performer herself,
uh-huh.
and so Pat wrote some terrific lyrics that were really fun to create these tunes to. And, you know, Leslie Bevan plays Bing, and she has kind of a bombastic, really sexy, hot number to sing. And then we get Terry Logan's number, and she's more, I don't want to...
Well, the original impulse, that was more of Elvis, because
yes,
that's right
Elvis.
Around the time that Elvis was hitting, and mm-hmm. Terry has that same effect on the bar. That,
she's got that rock and roll.
That she shakes up everything that happens
exactly.
in the bar.
Yeah.
So that was our... influence with Terry.
So what do you think the relevance for lesbians is today in seeing a play like this and seeing a part of their history as opposed to what we get to watch today, which is like the L Word, which couldn't seem any more not our world for many people and for some
yeah.
maybe, you know. I wear heels, but not most that I know do.
The relevance. Well, I tried to have it be a play about trying to find your place in the world and trying to find your love. And I think that that's relevant for
everybody.
Hopefully everybody.
It
that
is.
For because during our, actually in all the productions that I've seen, it's been lovely to see how much gay guys have loved it, how much the straight suburban folks have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because when it played here and it sold out, the audience was really diverse.
Totally
this is not
diverse.
Just a lesbian show.
Absolutely.
What do you think is, I mean, if we had to go through, like, it's obvious what the lesbian appeal is, hot mm-hmm. women, titillating, you know, doing drag, I mean, mm-hmm. the whole nine yards. But what about the gay men? What is kind of their quotient? Is it the camp factor and kind of the smarts? Because it's such a smartly written script.
Thank
Kane.
You. And hopefully it's funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a comedy? And, you know, and it's Jessica Phoebus directs this production, and Jessica is such a brilliant, wonderful director, and it is smart direction as well. So it's just a dang good time.
It's a dang good time. And I got to say, my 83-year-old mother-in-law, who I don't think she would ever have gone to a gay pride parade or,
right.
you know, but she was definitely like, just blown away by this production. She said, it's the best show. And, you know, for old people, young people, my stepson, who was, you know, 19 at the time, was like, that was a really great show, Amy. Everybody loved it. Everybody.
Well, and I tried, and Jessica endows this so beautifully, is that I tried to have the show be sexy but not sleazy.
Yes.
Right. So it is, you know, it's PG-13. It's not XX, you know, and it's hopefully it does have a great appeal.
And though there is a very specific style what we're doing, I mean, it's obviously it's set in the 50s and there is this really specific style, but they're all very real people. They're
right.
all really, and there's a sweetness to it too that I just am really happy about. Like it's,
well, I wanted it to be an homage, not a send up. And I think that's
what do you see as the difference?
I think that send ups have a harsh side to them in which you're making fun of the genre and you're making fun of the people. I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to, because I love old movies. I love this cover art. I am so
thrilled that the women who wrote these did that. Although they often did it under pseudonyms, mm-hmm. I'm happy that they took that leap because I think it was a very important part of our history. So I didn't want to make fun of it. I wanted to enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's really interesting to revive a show always. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about the next time around? Amy, do you go, gosh, I just really want to do this thing that I never got to do or explore another side that I never... Well, do you get to continue asking the questions
yes,
about who these women are?
Do. And it's funny because we have a pretty protracted rehearsal period this time around. But Jessica's already started bringing in things that we maybe didn't get to last time. And last time the production was... I wouldn't say it's flawless, but it was pretty darn great, the production, when we did it in 2004. Yeah. Now, 3 years later, we're all coming at it, you know, we're 3 years older.
Right.
And, you know, we've all been kind of all over the place in terms of our own personal lives. And I think, I think we're going to go a little bit deeper in terms of the characters' vulnerabilities and things like that. But I think it's still, you know, it's still going to be really fun and funny.
And one of the things for you in playing Winnie and talking about, you know, kind of the vulnerability is there is a real, though there are no men in this production, there is a real understanding of that it's a man's world that these women are in the well, they're in this nightclub, in this nightlife type of environment, and kind of the consequences and of inside, outside, like the freedom inside the well, in their bar, with each other and what happens outside. And with that, you explore a lot of issues of gender, which I think are mm-hmm. really more savvy to today that probably wasn't being discussed in the pulp novels. Can you talk a little bit about that with Winnie and Winifred and these kind of drag king numbers, which are still so contemporary today? I mean, we'll have an ad in the newspaper, you know, sometime in the next month about a drag king performance. So it's still being done. There still seems to be a need for this type of expression.
Well, the idea of Winnie, who is the one who dresses and is the drag king and goes out into the world dressed as a man on occasion, was based on some stuff that I read in that there were women doing this at that time. And
it was really big, actually. They'd walk into the clubs kind of man. This is where we get the whole butch femme.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's where it originated, but definitely those terms really heightened and became clearly defined lines the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Well, and I would assume it would be safer if you kind of went, is that a guy with that girl or is that a what?
Yeah.
You know, so, but the Winnie, this part, she goes out in the world, dressed as a man in order to participate in a men's skeet shooting championship. And that is actually from real life that I read about a woman here in town, and her name escapes me at the moment, who would do skeet shooting out here at the lake, which is where I got the idea for it. I read her obituary in like 2002, and there was also a woman who was a very famous polo player who dressed as a man for years, and everybody, it was kind of like the open secret. But she wasn't allowed to play with the men, but she was just as good as the men. So she dressed as a man and hid herself that way, hid herself in open, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So polo is a very violent sport, more violent than
skeet shooting. Well, she had problems with that, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there was violence that happened with her and stuff. But
well, it's just, it's a fantastic world, and I hope everybody will come out. You're only playing for 3 weeks this year, so at this point in time, don't expect it to extend. Who knows if it will, but Pulp is playing at Victory Gardens Greenhouse, which is 2257 North Lincoln Avenue, for 3 weeks only. The first 3 weeks of May 2nd through the 20th. And if you'd like tickets, you can call Victory Gardens at 773-871-3000 or visit About Face Theater, and that's with an R-E, aboutfacetheater.com. I have to say, the Tribune said it was funny, smart, eminently entertaining. Long may it sizzle, and it's just great to have it come back. It is a funny, funny show. It is a sexy show. You will not see better performances from actresses in Chicago, and the writing is absolutely clever and stellar.
Thank you.
I had the pleasure of reading the first draft, so I know how good it was. I was like, don't touch anything. It's fantastic. So everybody come and see Pulp. Don't miss it. It'll be a great way to kick off your summer and head you into Gay Pride. Straight, gay, trans, bi, whatever. You will love this play.
That's true.
And Patricia Kane and Amy Warren, thanks so much for being on the Queercast.
Thank you, Amy.
That was fun.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
For me, when I'm all alone, I'm shaking all over. I need a love injection, love injection. Ah! Never thought I'd find that special one. And now you're here and oh yeah.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.